good afternoon, good afternoon, good afternoon. It is a Tuesday, August the 16th, 2016. 8/16/16. 1:15 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I'm Scott Spears along with you on the Now program. And we have got a great hour of programming coming up you're not going to want to miss. I'm going to tell you what's coming up in the bottom of the hour really quickly. At 1:30, we're going to be joined live from Graceland by our correspondent, John Daly, as today is the 39th anniversary of the death of the King of Rock and Roll, Elvis Presley. Coming up at 1:45 this afternoon, in about a half hour, we're going to be joined live via telephone by Dan Benjamin, who was the coordinator for counterterrorism under Secretary Hillary Clinton, former fellow at Brookings Institute and the Center for Strategic and International Studies. That's coming up in the bottom half of the hour. But our first guest here is somebody who I've wanted to have on for a long time. Last week, due to some telephone problems, we were not able to get her on, but I'm sure you have seen her touring the Buckeye State in the last few days, and what a perfect time to have her on, because she is an Olympic medalist in 1998 and 2002, and as you know, the Olympics are going strong. In the field of figure skating, she is Michelle Kwan. Michelle, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much for having me. I'm sorry that I missed you in the Buckeye State, but glad to be on the phone with you.
Absolutely. Michelle, I just have to ask you here before we get to the meat and potatoes of what we're going to talk about. What do you think of the Olympics this year?
It is super exciting. Being in a Winter Olympian, you know, just glued to the television screen. And right now is the full routine where Allie Raisman and Simone Biles are competing for gold. It's been just a nonstop, just exciting to watch from opening ceremonies, and I'll be glued to television till closing ceremonies, and then on to Paralympics. So, exciting few weeks.
Do you think Michael Phelps will be back?
Do I think that Michael Phelps will retire?
Yeah, do you think he'll retire after this one?
Hard to say, but I think he said it a few times in interviews where he's like, yeah, I think this time it's for real. So I have to take his word, unfortunately. As much as I would like to see him 4 years from now competing for gold again, I think maybe he's got other plans in his future. Exciting because he's a father as well. He's been through so much, 23 Olympic gold medals, just a superb Olympic career.
Absolutely. Michelle, you were here in the Buckeye State touring around. A lot of people got to meet you, and the reason you were doing that was you were campaigning, showing your support for former Secretary of State and First Lady Hillary Clinton. How did you come to the decision to back Secretary Clinton?
Well, long story short, when I finished my skating career and I decided to hang up my skates, I ended up going back to school. Went to grad school as well. At the same time, I was appointed as an envoy traveling with the Department of State, or for the Department of State. And I think to everyone's surprise and shock, I actually got a real job. I worked for Secretary Clinton at the Department of State as one of the advisors. And so I saw firsthand her leadership and vision. And I think before she even announced, I was completely 1,000% on board and ready for Hillary. And I couldn't wait in the sidelines. Decided to jump in and become staff. I'm full-time staff on her campaign, and it's just been an honor. And there's so much at stake. There's 84 more days till the election, and it's just critical that people come out to vote and vote for Hillary.
It's very interesting because we open up the phone lines here a lot at the station, and we hear a lot of opinions on what people are saying here in this battleground state of Ohio. And one of the things people say on a continuous basis is they don't feel that Hillary is personable. These books have come out that she has done things that she's not a nice person. For somebody who has known her, tell us about Hillary Clinton away from the cameras.
Well, I can definitely challenge that. She is a very nice person, a great sense of humor, and you can see it in the campaign trail. From day one, she has met in small groups, has really listened. I think as a leader, she really listens and understands the challenges that Americans face all across the country and in the world. And I think that's one thing that on the campaign trail you can see and see firsthand. And I saw it as I worked for her at the State Department, but also really talking about the issues that really affect Americans. And she is the only candidate that is addressing and has plans for it. So day one, she can move and move our country forward.
That being said, moving our country forward, what can she do, in your opinion, that Donald Trump cannot do, that maybe even President Obama, President Bush have not been able to do? What can Hillary Clinton do for the people of this country?
Well, Hillary Clinton has put forward a comprehensive plan. I mean, one thing that I do encourage folks to do is go on the website and learn sort of all the policies that she has put forward. Just recently, the economy, like how to build an economy that works for everyone, not just those on the top. And I think that's the contrast to a candidate that has sort of been speaking about in sort of dangerous rhetoric. And I think that is the big contrast. She knows that we are stronger together. And that's in the contrast with someone who is talking about building walls and divide us. So I think right here, there's so much at stake, and there's no one single answer to all of them. And I think that's the difference between Hillary and another candidate.
You didn't even say his name, Donald Trump. Is there a reason you didn't mention the name?
Well, I think right now I don't need to say it.
Well, that's true, but we had in our first hour today, we had Republican Ambassador Robert Blackwill on, who is part of a group, Republicans and Independents for Hillary Clinton, and he pointed out why he would be troubled if Donald Trump became president. Would that trouble you?
It would definitely trouble me. There's so much to do in 84 days. I really can't even think about that. But I think right now it's very clear that which candidate is fighting for Americans and has a record for fighting for Americans her whole entire adult life. I mean, starting all the way back from when she graduated Yale Law School, she could have easily taken an easier path, but decided to work at the Children's Defense Fund, fighting for children with disabilities, making sure and ensuring that they have the right that every other children has. And, you know, it continues into when she was Senator of New York, Secretary of State, First Lady. I mean, her path has always been fighting and best making sure that she's fighting for Americans through and through.
That being said, you mentioned it there, First Lady, Senator from New York, Secretary of State, and we won't talk about Donald Trump at this point, but why are her trustworthy, from somebody who's worked with her, why is she so untrusted still by the American people? She's been in front of us for 30 years.
Well, I don't...
Distrusted, I guess I should say.
I don't think if you ask 100 Americans that they would all agree with that.
I think her trustworthy rating is still about 36%.
And I believe that one of the things that people need to recognize is where it's coming from. And she has years of people attacking her and which side. And I think still she stays strong. I think that is the one thing that through and through she has been continuing to fight and focusing on the challenges that people face, perhaps. And she has also mentioned, you know, that it's sad that they feel that way, people who believe that.
Do you understand why they feel that way?
Maybe you can explain.
Well, the things I hear, when we open up the phone lines, the things I always hear, oddly enough, because we do have a lot of people who call in who I think are very Republican, who say they have no interest in Donald Trump, but the line always is, we can't trust Hillary. We can't vote for her, so we're either not going to vote at all, or we're going to vote third party, because, and of course the two words that come up are the two words that come up in the media all the time, Benghazi and emails. Do you think she'll ever be able to get past that?
I think she already has, being the Democratic nominee, breaking history and shattering the glass ceiling into a million pieces. I think Hillary has been focused on challenges that Americans face, and has been an incredible public servant from her time as Secretary of State, as Senator, as First Lady, has every day fought for rights for people, and whether it's LGBT issues, women's rights, pay equity, she has through and through been fighting for Americans.
That being said, what do you say to people who say that sometimes the things that she says on the campaign trail don't match up to what she says in private? Emails being one of those things where even the director of the FBI called her extremely careless, and she even said on the campaign trail, I think a couple weeks ago, that she short-circuited.
What do I say? I think, again, going back to her record on what she has been able to accomplish in her career as a public servant should speak for itself. She has fought for Americans. She does stand up for what's right. And I think that is something that I just can leave it at that.
What do you most look forward to if there is a Hillary Clinton presidency?
Building on the progress that we've already made through President Obama. I think that is from day one, and Hillary Clinton's experience and the qualifications to move our economy, to build on the progress that we've made.
The question go ahead, finish.
No, fine.
The question, of course, will be asked, they'll say, well, of course, Michelle Kwan worked for her. What else would she say? How do you answer those people?
I think that being, having had that experience, seeing firsthand, I don't really know how I would respond to that anyways, because I have seen firsthand her leadership and vision and what she has been able to accomplish. So I don't know in terms of having to actually say much in response to that.
Final question. Give us a personal Hillary moment, something we did not see on camera that shows that she's a real person. Because when we see somebody on television for 30 years, it's very hard to think of them as a real person anymore. They're more of a figure. Give me a personal moment with Hillary that we did not see.
I think you can see it when the cameras are off, and even when the cameras are rolling. You see different sides of Hillary where you see her interacting with children. You see her interacting with Americans and answering questions and also listening. I think she's the type of leader that really listens. And, as commander-in-chief, you need a commander-in-chief that will listen to Americans.
It has been an absolute pleasure to have you on today, Olympian Michelle Kwan. Thank you so much, Michelle, and I hope we can talk again.
Thank you so much. Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Michelle Kwan, Olympic medalist. very interesting, supporting Hillary Clinton, and gave her reasons why. Any thoughts on that? 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. Don't forget, coming up in the bottom of the hour, Dan Benjamin, coordinator for counterterrorism under Secretary Hillary Clinton, former fellow at Brookings Institute and the Center for Strategic and International Studies. That coming up at 1:45. And I think we're going to be joined at some point by somebody from Graceland, which I think we are about to do here. As we continue on with our program this afternoon, as many of you know, who are fans of the King, as he is better known, Elvis Presley, today is the commemoration of the 39th anniversary of his passing. So we head down to Memphis, Tennessee to get a read of what it's like down there with a friend of mine who's been doing this for quite a long time, John Daly. John, how are you?
How's it going? Greetings from Memphis, Tennessee.
Oh, good. How is it in Memphis?
Well, there's a lot of people. We considered it kind of to be an off year. Usually like the big anniversaries, like the 40th, that sort of thing. But trying to find parking down here, I mean, there was a lot of people here considering it was kind of one of the smaller anniversaries.
Even though this is an anniversary, this marks something, it's a sad anniversary. It's an anniversary of his death. What is the mood because of that?
It's very somber. Today is a very rough day for Elvis fans. But the week actually has been more of a celebration of his life. So there's been dance parties. There was I attended a gospel concert the other night where several of his original backup singers were. So earlier in the week, it's more of a celebration of his life. And then once you hit August 16th, it's more of the reality of things, and it's more of a somber type day.
What goes on today down there in Graceland?
It's pretty much, they don't, out of respect for him, there's no events scheduled or planned or anything. So pretty much it's more of kind of a reflection type. My plans for this afternoon is actually going to be to go up to the mansion and do a tour just by myself and just kind of soak things up and actually be in the house. 39 years to the day is going to be what my goal is.
When people go there, as you say, it's a festive feeling during the week, but today a somber feeling. Last night, the big candlelight vigil, what is that about? You spoke at that last night. Tell us what it was like.
All right, so the candlelight vigil started the year after his death. Fans just showed up on the eve of his death. And so it's pretty much has morphed into the closing down of Elvis Presley Boulevard. And we have an opening ceremony, and then everyone lights candles from torches that were lit. At Elvis's the headstone, there's an eternal flame. And so what we do is we remove the glass topper, go in there, get a torch, and then everyone lights their candles from the torch from his gravesite. And pretty much single file up past his grave. It's pretty emotional because it's Graceland's driveway is so long, and all you see is just candles all the way down. And people are into the street. They're doing they've got little pictures set up, and they're in lawn chairs and they're looking at the mansion, and his music is being played. It's nothing like I've ever seen before. It's very hard to describe. 39 years later, and thousands of people still show up, so it's pretty emotional. It's definitely speaks volumes of the type of guy that he was.
Thousands of people still show up 39 years later. What is your guesstimate of how many people were there?
The whole week, the gospel concert was sold out. I would say there was probably small year, probably 10 to 15,000 people here. The hotels were all full. There was parking was tough. there was a lot of people here.
Why do you think 39 years later it's still a stopping point for people?
he's just an icon. A lot of people grew up with him, so you have those fans. You've got fans that were born after his death, like myself, that have been kind of roped into his charisma. There's a lot of younger fans that I've noticed that have come. I saw a lady last night with her son that was like 3 years old. She was probably 30. I came through and lit their candle. It poured rain, so everybody had their umbrellas. That didn't deter us. It just was the type of man that he was. He just was a very genuine type guy, and I think that just resonates with people. His music, his gospel music, his Christmas music, his live concerts, his movie music. I mean, there's just, the guy has just such a catalog that's appealing to just everyone, that he's just conquered all aspects of music, and I think people relate to that.
Are there people there for this anniversary of Note that knew him well that we would know?
Yes. Wynonna's mother, Naomi Judd, she was at the gospel concert the other night. I sat next to his drummer last night at the candlelight vigil. I've been hanging out with his nurse, Tish Henley, all of this week. Priscilla and Lisa, a lot of times they will make it into town for the anniversary. So, yeah, I mean, it's been known that celebrities have come. Bruno Mars, he used to come down all the time and perform as a kid down here at Elvis Week. So, yeah, there's been a lot of celebrities that have come through to experience Elvis Week.
You say you've been hanging out with his nurse this week. What are her thoughts on this?
She said he would absolutely be blown away. She had made the comment to me the other day that he had said to her that after he died, he thought it probably would be, 10 years after he had died, that people would not remember him. And she said he would absolutely probably fall out to see the amount of people that have come to still support his career, to support him, his family. She said he would absolutely be dumbfounded to see all of this.
Next year is 40 mm-hmm. years since his passing. What do you think will happen, should happen next year?
Well, next year is going to be huge because all of the fans overseas are gearing up for that one. I've already been contacted by a lot of fans from Europe, friends from Brazil, Japan, and everyone will be here for this. Like this is going to be a huge one next year. The 40th anniversary, it would not surprise me if the candlelight vigil did not go into the wee hours of the morning and daylight was going on. Like, everyone will be coming for that one.
You spoke last night. What did you say?
I basically, there's a song that he did at the Madison Square Garden concert, The Impossible Dream. And I kind of recapped about his rise from Tupelo, Mississippi, to this mega star. He just followed his heart. He followed his ear for music, and he pretty much became the king of rock and roll. I don't think he set out to do that, but that's what happened. So it was just pretty much like a recap of that particular song that kind of fit in well with who he was, is pretty much what I had said.
As you said, you were born after his death, a Marion, Ohio boy. This is what you wanted to do. What was it like last night speaking there?
Well, it was very emotional for me. I came down, the first candlelight vigil I experienced was in 1997, the summer break, and while going to Harding High School, my dad brought me down. And I remember wanting to go up and get a candle and go up past the grave. And my dad's like, it's not happening, the lines are too long. And so last night, as I stood with my speech in hand in front of the mansion, it was very emotional for me to realize that at 16, I was standing, in the street. And now, I'm 35, and here I am standing at the podium holding a microphone that says Graceland, standing in front of his mansion. It was pretty incredible. I have to say, it was definitely a highlight of my life. It was pretty cool.
Why is this gentleman, who you never knew, weren't ever in the same lifetime together, why does that mean so much to you? Why does he mean so much to you?
It's he just kind of ties in with you, with your with emotions. Like, you know, if you have a really great day, you know, you can get in the car and toss in the song Viva Las Vegas and drive down the street, you know, singing along, and it's, you know, it's just, it just adds to it. Or if you have a really bad day, you know, there's songs from like his 76 album that are kind of deep and moody. You know, he just has such a range of music that you can pick everything, you know, to match how your mood is, you know. Or if you're in a bad mood, you can even put on one of his movies or one of his concerts, and it just kind of removes you from your current situation, and you're almost invited into his world. And then, you know, when the concert or the movie is done, it's kind of like things are okay. It's kind of hard to explain.
A lot of people might find it a little bizarre to celebrate the death of somebody. Why is that celebrated or commemorated?
It's not really a celebration of his death. It's really a celebration of his life. Elvis Week is more about the history that Elvis had left us, and it's more about you know, his career. And I had set up at the convention, you know, I have an online store on Facebook called the Elvis Pawn Shop, and so I was dealing a lot with his memorabilia this week and hanging out with people that knew him, and it was fun. It was a great time. But then once Candlelight Vigil rolls around, it's a transition from his life and his legacy more towards the man. And so last night, the Candlelight Vigil is more of a celebration of him, not his career. He had a phenomenal career, but as a man and who he was and the good things that he did, the Candlelight Vigil is more for him, not for his career.
First year you say you went was 1997, 19 years ago. You went with your father then. Who did you attend with this year?
This year I was with numerous fan club presidents from around the world, multiple friends, many friends, and several people that knew him. You know, like I said, his nurse was there, his drummer was there, several fans that knew him well were there. Several of his friends were there. I ran into one of his bodyguards last night. He was there. So the night of Candlelight, like I said, it's all about him. And so even the people that knew him get mixed in with the fans, and everyone is there for him, not for, oh, I knew him and you didn't, and I was in a movie with him but you weren't. Everybody is there for him, and it's just a big mixture of young fans, old fans, people that knew him, people that didn't know him. We're all there for one reason, regardless of what our history is with or without him knowing us.
Elvis Presley passed away 39 years ago today, August the 16th, 2016, would have been 1977. John Daly, former Marion resident, Marion boy, making good on a life. John, thank you so much for calling in.
No problem. Have a great one. Thanks.
Bye-bye. There you go. There's our base touching with Elvis. Died 39 years ago today. Momentarily, we're going to be joined by Dan Benjamin, coordinator for counterterrorism under Secretary Hillary Clinton, former fellow at Brookings Institute and the Center for Strategic and International Studies. Boy, I'll tell you, I will have that memorized by the time he comes on. And I think that's going to be momentarily. We continue on with the program here this afternoon. Have had a lot of fun. It's about 44 minutes past the hour. And we're going to continue on talking politics as we are joined via telephone by Dan Benjamin, coordinator for counterterrorism under Secretary Hillary Clinton, former fellow at Brookings Institute and the Center for Strategic and International Studies. Dan, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
It's been an interesting week. Well, first of all, that big title, tell me what you exactly did under Secretary Hillary Clinton.
I was head of the Bureau of Counterterrorism at the State Department. I was her principal advisor on terrorism matters, presented her in meetings with the top officials from other agencies in the U.S. government dealing with terrorism.
We had Michelle Kwan earlier on, who had worked with Secretary Clinton. What is she like as a person to work with?
She's delightful. She's really impressive in her ability to manage many, many different portfolios at one time. Her ability to multitask is really extraordinary, and she always seems to be up to date on everything that's going on in one's world. And she has a great sense of humor and a famous laugh. And of the many bosses I've had, she was one of the very best.
Two big issues in the last couple of days here, of course, that we would want to talk about in regard to terrorism and the election impending. Yesterday, Donald Trump's campaign manager, Paul Manafort, had received, allegedly, $12.7 million in undisclosed cash payments from the pro-Kremlin political party in Ukraine. Mr. Manafort has said that that's not exactly true. What's your read on that?
So the exact details of Mr. Manafort's dealings with the pro-Russian Ukrainian operatives remains to be fully elucidated, but he is being investigated in the Ukraine for being in the ledger of this group, and it's no secret that he was a consultant to Viktor Yanukovych, the pro-Russian president of Ukraine, who had to flee his country several years ago. And of course, that's the party that has been associated with some of the really disappointing developments in Ukraine, the secessionists in the east, the annexation of Crimea, and Mr. Manafort's and also Donald Trump's own ties to Putin remain a huge question mark over this campaign. It should also be noted that Mr. Manafort has consulted with a whole array of really unsavory leaders and lobbied for them, from the former Philippine dictator Ferdinand Marcos, Jonas Savimbi, the Angolan rebel, President Mobutu Sese Seko in Zaire. This is a real gallery of some of the villains of the last 50 years. So, he's obviously not a man with a lot of scruples about who he works with, and it all sort of feeds into the broader questions of what is Donald Trump's relationship with Russia and Vladimir Putin.
Interestingly enough, this question comes up a lot, and you would be the best to answer it, having worked in counterterrorism. If Donald Trump was really involved with Vladimir Putin in any way, or Mr. Manafort, why would he choose this man to head his campaign, and why would he keep making these remarks in public? Wouldn't he try to hide it?
You're asking an obvious question that puzzles all of us. Trump is not known for being very disciplined in his public statements, and he's left a whole trail of remarks admiring Putin. I think that the universe of very experienced political consultants who were prepared to work with Trump was pretty small, and Manafort does have a track record, and so I can only assume that's why he went with him.
An interesting issue that came about yesterday, even after we had this interview scheduled, was former mayor of New York, Rudy Giuliani, who is supporting Donald Trump, made a comment, and I want to make sure I get this right. He said, and this is a quote, "Any successful radical Islamic terrorist attack in the United States has not happened before President Barack Obama took office." Now, here's the exact quote. Under those 8 years before Obama came along, we didn't have any successful radical Islamic terrorist attack in the United States. They all started when Clinton, meaning Hillary, and Obama got into office. That speech was made Monday in Ohio, where Trump also delivered a speech. Of course, we're all thinking about September 11th, which Rudy Giuliani should know about. What do you make of that comment?
Hello?
Yes.
Yeah, so, you know, obviously 9/11 happened during the Bush administration, the most devastating terrorist attack in our history. And, you know, in the 1990s, there was an earlier attempt to blow up the World Trade Center. There were several different conspiracies that were thwarted in the 1990s. So, you know, Mayor Giuliani's just way off base on that.
Why do you think he said that?
Wishful thinking. You know, it's really kind of hard to understand. I have to say that the Rudy Giuliani of today resembles, in so few ways, the Rudy Giuliani of 20 years ago or 25 years ago, and has become such a partisan actor on the U.S. stage that you know, it's really kind of hard to understand what has gone on with him, what he's thinking, because you know, his remarks have really kind of lost touch with reality lately.
We open up the phone lines here a lot. Ohio is a battleground state. It's still very close here between Secretary Clinton and Donald Trump. And we have had many Republicans call in who say they can't vote for Donald Trump, but they just don't trust Hillary Clinton. Her trustworthy numbers are always in the 30% when they do it nationally. Why, for somebody who worked with her on a very important issue, why do people not trust her?
Well, so I think this, unfortunately, is the result of decades of some really unsavory politics. I have to, acknowledge that my involvement in government goes back to 1994, when I went to work as a speechwriter for President Clinton, and I was working as director for counterterrorism in the late 90s, when our embassies were blown up in East Africa. And, you know, there was, what can I say, there was just one sort of made-up scandal after another, and I think that that takes a toll, even though time after time, there were no, you know, conclusive results that indicated that she'd done anything improper. You know, there was, for example, Whitewater, which dominated the headlines throughout the 1990s, and which there was never a single indictment of any note brought in. That is to say, you know, the Clintons were completely absolved. They lost money on the deal. But I think that when this dominates the news every day for years and years, it does influence people's perspectives. And I think it's, you know, a really depressing fact. I have to say I consider her to be beyond reproach when it comes to these issues, the issue of trustworthiness. And I'm just sorry more people didn't have the same experience working with her that I did.
You, obviously, very important position, coordinator for counterterrorism. Does it bother you that she used a private server, the whole email thing, that even the head of the FBI called her extremely careless?
So, you know, she acknowledges that she made a mistake using the server, using her own server. I think that is regrettable. On the other hand, you know, most of the material that was on that server, most of those emails involved, I mean, the overwhelming majority involved matters that the State Department did not consider to be classified, even though other agencies in a post hoc review, if you will, decided that they were. So, you know, it was a judgment lapse. There's no question about it. She said she wouldn't do it again. I think that compared to some of the issues that have been discussed, for example, regarding Mr. Trump, I think it's a relatively limited matter.
When she did the interview with Chris Wallace a few weeks ago, the next day she got four Pinocchios in a very respected newspaper, not a trashy newspaper. Do you believe her? Do you believe that she's always been honest to the public?
I do. I think that she misspoke in that interview, and the fact is, if you're a political individual and you're giving interviews as frequently as she is, or speaking publicly as frequently as she is, you do have a certain problem, which is burnout, and that results in the occasional misstatement. I think that she was really quick about reeling that one back in, saying she'd gotten it wrong. I think, that she has been quite honest. I have never wanted to raise my hand and say, no, that I was there, that wasn't right. That's never happened to me. Obviously most of your viewers don't know me, listeners, don't know me. But in my experience, she's a scrupulously honest person.
When we look at the whole situation and people use that as a reason for not voting for her, what do you say to those people?
Well, look, this is a situation in which a lot of people's long-term attitudes are coming into play, and it's kind of hard to, turn back time and roll through all the different issues that may have caused them to come to these concerns. I think that the really important thing for those people to ask themselves is whether that is some kind of infraction or misdeed that is so great that they would actually consider voting for Trump, who is, I agree with Vice President Biden, the least qualified individual to have ever run for this office. And I'm a student of American history, and I think I have a pretty good idea of what previous candidates look like. The risk to our national security, the risk to our prosperity, it's just staggering. And really, the risk to, the kind of atmosphere and the basic decency of our society from Trump, I find beyond belief. And I think people really need to think hard about what it is they want for themselves, for their kids, their grandkids. It's just, to my mind, the threat of a Trump presidency is really incredible.
We have 3 minutes left and two very important questions. Being in counterterrorism at one point, why is Hillary Clinton better suited to deal with that than Donald Trump? And in the broad sense, what can be done to fight a group like ISIS?
So two big questions in little time. Let me begin with this. Donald Trump, I think, whether he realizes it or not, has systematically alienated our allies, our most important allies in the fight against terrorism, and allies in dealing with a transnational problem like counterterrorism are absolutely essential. Mr. Trump has said so many xenophobic, Islamophobic things that it's very hard for me to imagine the leaders of Saudi Arabia, the leaders of Iraq, of Jordan, of any number of different countries really wanting to even be seen with him. He has said that there is a sickness at the heart of Islam, and insulting people's religions like that, is just a non-starter. It's a disaster. Whereas Secretary Clinton has worked closely with these people over many, many years, knows them all, and I think is trusted by them, and is in the in the great tradition, continuous tradition of maintaining alliances and working well with allies, and able to promote the give and take that we need to pursue our goals. That's the most important thing right now. And as for ISIS, it is a problem, there's no question, but we've made a lot of progress against it. They've lost about 40% of their territory. They've lost a lot of leaders. I think that in the new technologies and tactics that the government has developed over the years, including drones, including excellent special operations capabilities, we do have the wherewithal to beat them back. We do need friends who are going to do the work of holding that territory on the ground in those regions. And I'm afraid with Donald Trump, we won't have anyone to work with. I just don't see how he musters any global alliance, any global coalition to make that happen. You know, I think that's really the key issue in this election for me.
We have about a minute left, and so I'm going to get another question in here. Working in counterterrorism, being that that is somewhat covert, that we don't like to give too much information out, does it bother you in any way that Secretary Clinton did use a private server and that some of that information could have been intercepted by our enemies?
You know, I'm fairly aware of what kind of information has been described as problematic. I don't think any of it in any way endangered our national security. A lot of these discussions were completely elliptical and were not precise about our capabilities or about our intelligence, about our sources and methods. And frankly, I wouldn't be surprised if a real audit of other agencies' communications found similar kinds of discussions. So the notion that this really undermined our national security is wrong. I think that it was wrong to use the server. I certainly didn't have my own server, and all my other colleagues were on the system, but I just think that we should keep this in perspective.
You worked under Secretary Clinton at that time. Did you know she was using a private server?
No.
Okay. Hey, do you think other people knew?
I think some people may have had a vague idea that she had her own email address and that something was different, but I don't know if anyone other than her very closest aides knew.
Dan,
I just don't know.
Dan Benjamin, Coordinator for Counterterrorism under Secretary Hillary Clinton. Thank you so much. This has been a very enlightening conversation. Thank you.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Thank you. Bye-bye. And that is all the time we have for today, folks. Hope you enjoyed the conversation, and we are out, as this is Scott Spears heading for the dugout. Stay tuned for much more here on WWGH Radio.
A little bit, ugh, yucky. But bad people always have edges to them. That's why they're so wonderful to play for actors.
That?
Because you can pick all the things in life as a human being that annoy you or that you would like to do to be really rotten mean. Most people are too afraid to be rotten mean because we want people's approval so badly, and we know that being rotten mean isn't going to get us that. But oh, villains for actors are the best things in the world to play.
You know, Pat, that almost describes our current political situation in this country.
Doesn't it just? I'd never thought of that, but you're quite right.
WWGH Radio, 107.1 FM, Marion, Ohio, streaming live on the internet at www.wwgh1071.com. Black Tie Enterprises and Limo is a proud supporter of WWGH Radio 107.1 FM, Marion, Ohio. Address 645 Pearl Street. Telephone number 740-386-5466. Website www.blacktiemarionoh.com.
Tecumseh is quality family entertainment in your own backyard, a destination for history buffs, theater lovers, and families for over 40 years. Experience this world-famous outdoor drama near Chillicothe, Ohio this summer. Visit TecumsehDrama.com today or call 740-775-0700 for information and reservations.
Don't just wonder about science, experience it. Visit COSCI, the number one science center in the country. From microscopic cells to far-reaching galaxies, COSI lets you get hands-on with science through themed exhibits, a world-class planetarium, and a giant screen theater. This summer, science up and geek out in Game Masters, the exhibition, featuring over 100 playable video games, only at COSI in Columbus. Visit COSI.org.
Hemmerly's Flowers and Gifts, address 615 East Center Street here in Marion, telephone number 740-387-1163, website hemmerlysflowers.com, is a proud supporter of WWGH Radio 107.1 FM, Marion, Ohio.
This is Phil Reed, and you can catch Marianne Michaels, Scott Spears, and Charlie Evers every Friday, 12:10 until 1 p.m. for the Exchange Club, supported by Kroger right here on WWGH 107.1 FM, streaming live on the internet at www.wwgh1071.com. They discuss topics of the day and take your calls at 740-383-9944. Join them.
This is the Phyllis Schlafly Report. Mrs. Schlafly is a constitutional attorney, pro-family leader, and author of 25 books, including the best-selling A Choice, Not an Echo. And now, here's the founder of Eagle Forum, Phyllis Schlafly.
One educational curriculum that has delivered on its promises is the abstinence program used in the public schools of Collier County, Florida. In the 8 years since the program began, births to unwed teen mothers ages 15 to 19 have fallen an amazing 50%, and cases of STDs among girls in that same age group have also dropped from 29th to the third lowest among Florida's 67 counties. The curriculum distributed by the Collier County Abstinence Program was introduced 10 years ago in the 7th and 8th grades, and it proved so successful that age-appropriate versions are now used in the 6th and 9th grades. Several factors contributed to making Florida a good place for abstinence education. Florida state law requires public schools to teach abstinence from sexual activity outside of marriage as the expected standard for all school-age students, while teaching the benefits of monogamous heterosexual marriage. The same law also requires schools to teach that each student has the power to control his own personal behavior. The other key factor is that Florida allows public schools to accept donations of supplementary materials and use those materials in the classroom to fulfill any required curricular objective. The 6th, 7th, 8th, and 9th grade course books provided without charge by the nonprofit Collier County Abstinence Program are welcomed by classroom teachers who saw how beneficial it is to have healthy kids. If you really care about what works in middle school, adopt the Collier County Abstinence Program in your public school.
This has been the Phyllis Schlafly Report from Eagle Forum. As a parent, are your core values being threatened by the local school district? Do you feel called to protect your own children and be an advocate for your community? At eagleforum.org, enter the blog with Phyllis Schlafly and you'll be informed and equipped to make a difference. That's at eagleforum.org. Thanks for listening, and join us next time for the Phyllis Schlafly Report.
The Marion Center Mall is now leasing the newly remodeled community room. Telephone number 740-389-5785. Schrader Computer is a proud supporter of WWGH Radio 107.1 FM. Telephone number 740-251-9335. Web address www.schradercomputer.com. Address, 685 Delaware Avenue, Suite 116.
This is Marianne Michaels, and you are listening to WWGH Radio, 107.1 FM. Streaming live on the internet at wwgh1071.com. Find us on Facebook by searching WWGH Marion, Ohio, 107.1 FM, and clicking like for exclusive content.
Hello, this is Mr. McFeely from Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, and you know, Charlie Evers is a Marion radio legend, and you can catch him right here on WWGH 107.1 FM.
Okay, popular song.
Look who's
Somebody
coming.
Has arrived.
Oh, we have a delivery.
Speedy delivery. All right. Hey, well, I tell you, such a familiar look. Oh, my land.
Speedy delivery.
Yeah. And you're wearing the same outfit you had?
One of the same outfits. Hi, everybody. Oh, wow. I'm Mr. McFeely from Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood.
But you didn't come in on your bicycle.
No, I came in on my Element. Honda Element.
I would think you would be flooded with a certain generation of people.
Well, you know, we are, but we also are having the current generation, too, show
Great.
Up. Because the neighborhood is online.
That's right.
And streaming live on the internet at WWGH1071.com.
Yes, good afternoon. We're on the air.
KYW is in Cleveland.
Yes, KYW Cleveland.
Yeah, it was at Westinghouse.
Yeah, Westinghouse, yes.
I never watch TV, so I'm fine. So I listen to the radio all the time.
Well, good. Hey, well, I'm glad you're listening.
Oh, yeah. Always listening.
Great, okay.
I've listened to you, Charlie, for a long time.
No kidding? Oh, yeah. That's great.
You even got me started at getting up at 5 o'clock every morning.
Oh, yes.
Remember when you used to have the some guest people,
yeah.
You know, some financial people and stuff
yes.
at 5 or 5:30.
Right.
Know? That got me started.
Oh, no kid.
Charlie also takes your calls on anything under the sun by calling this number, 740-383-9944. Speedy delivery.
The Fahey Bank Charlie Evers Show every Wednesday and Thursday, 10:10 a.m. till 12 noon, and Friday, 1:10 p.m. till 3 p.m. on WWGH Radio 107.1 FM.
Meadows Lawn Care and Landscaping is a proud supporter of WWGH Radio 107.1 FM, Marion, Ohio. Telephone number 740-262-5638. Email meadowslawncare43302@gmail.com. Creating unique environments. Facebook, Meadows Lawn Care.
Hi friends, I'm Brett Gleespen from True Life Church. My wife Kim and I would like to invite you to visit us. Life is tough enough as it is. Here at TLC, you're going to learn to live life on purpose. Get answers for the things that you've been dreaming for. We believe God has great plans for you. Isn't it time you walked in them? Come home to TLC. Our service times are 9 a.m. and 10:30 a.m. every Sunday, located 390 East Center Street here in Marion. You can find us on the web at www.truelifemarion.com. We'll make you feel right at home. We'll be looking for you.
The Marion Towers Apartments are a supporter of WWGH Radio 107.1 FM. Address, 400 Delaware Avenue. Phone number, 740-387-9050.
It's now time for WWGH News. News about people, places, and plans. Brought to you live from the WWGH Newsroom.
This is Scott Spears in the WWGH News Center. Federal prosecutors are handling the case of a man arrested and indicted in connection with two June bank robberies in Marion County. Ronald Miles Jr. was indicted August the 3rd by a federal grand jury in the U.S. District Court's Northern District of Ohio on one count of bank robbery in regards to a June 17th incident at the Commercial Savings Bank on James Way Drive. Miles,